Welcome to the Quotivation Podcast. Together, we will unlock inspiration one quote at a time. Your host is one of America's top emerging public speakers. He is a former semifinalist in the World Championship of Public Speaking and is an expert motivator. Please welcome Jody Powell.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Quotivation Podcast, where we are unlocking inspiration one quote at a time. And I hope you've had a fantastic weekend. It was a long weekend as we're coming off celebrating the 4th of July, Independence Day. The fireworks are still exploding outside in the night air as obviously not everyone shot off all of their fireworks or had their fill on the 4th of July, and they continue to pop in the air. And of course, July wouldn't be July 4th wouldn't be July 4th without a little competitive eating. The annual hot dog eating contest held in New York. And, you know, it got me to thinking, what are some of the wildest, craziest competitive eating records? And so I looked up a few, and quite frankly, I'm a little sorry that I did. Of course, we all are familiar with a hot dog record, Joey Chestnut, eating 76 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes at Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest just back in 2021. But here's one for you. Okay. Molly Schuler, a female competitive eater, holds the record for eating chicken wings. Molly ate 501 chicken wings in 30 minutes at the Wing Bowl in 2018, 501 chicken wings. Now, listen, first of all, I have questions, okay? I have questions. Were they the drumsticks? Were they the flats? What are we talking about here? Like, how much of the meat did you have to get off the bone? I mean, are we talking about just sucking the bone dry and getting every piece of meat off that bone? Are we talking about taking smaller bites? I mean, there needs to be some clarification for this. 501 chicken wings in 30 minutes. Joey Chestnut just doesn't eat hot dogs, by the way. He holds the record. He holds a lot of records, actually. But this one blew me away. He holds the record for eating 126 tacos in 8 minutes at the Pacific Park Taco Eating Contest back in 2017, 126 tacos in 8 minutes. It's ridiculous. My wife doesn't even start eating the first 8 minutes. She's having to do all of her meal prep. Joey Chestnut's scarfing down 126 tacos, shoving those tacos down his gullet. Good grief. Let's see. He holds another record. Check this one out. This one, I don't know how I feel about this, but Joey Chestnut, once again, holds the record for the most Hostess powdered donuts. And he set this at the Donut Hole World Eating Championship in 2018. Who even knew there was such a thing? It sounds like heaven, to be perfectly honest, but I'm not so sure after reading this. Joey Chestnut ate 257 powdered donuts in 6 minutes. Are you kidding me? Like, how many gallons of milk did he have to drink with that? I mean, it's making me thirsty just thinking about it. Here's one more. I'll give you one more before we get into the show. This one absolutely gives me a terrible headache. Miki Sudo set the world record at the Indiana State Fair in 2017 by eating 16 and a half pints of vanilla ice cream in 6 minutes. I mean, talk about a brain freeze. Good grief. Oh, why do people do this to themselves? You know, the lengths we go to be entertained, I tell you. I'm almost sorry I looked this up. Listen, if you want to win your week, don't do any of this. Okay, don't go out and scarf down 257 powdered donuts in 6 minutes. If you want to win your week, keep on listening, because we are actually going to get into a little bit of motivation this week. And we're going to start like we do every week with our Quotivation Podcast episode. We're going to start by taking a shot of motivation. And this week, our shot of motivation is sponsored by Amy Real from Fairway Mortgage. Amy is the real deal in all things mortgage. Folks, give Amy a call. If you have a mortgage need, if you want to take a look at what it looks like to refinance, if you want that second mortgage on that vacation property or that second home, you need to give Amy a call today. If you're thinking about selling your home, right now is the perfect time to call Amy at Fairway Mortgage. Ask her about their special that they have, where it's a cash guaranteed program. They will make you a cash offer to buy your home if it doesn't sell before the allotted time period. Now, this takes away that contingency to buy. So if you're looking for a house and you find one, it's like, oh, we want to buy it, but we have to sell ours, and we'll put a contingency offer, and someone could come in at the last minute and pay cash, and then our dream home is gone. This eliminates all of that. So give Amy a call today. Her number is 864-310-9337. That's 864-310-9337. You can also send her an email at her email address, amy.real, R-E-I-H-L, at fairwaymc.com. She is Amy Real, and she is the real deal for all things mortgage. Her NMLS number is 486-620, and she's been sponsoring our shot of motivation from the very first week. Amy, I can't thank you enough for your support. Give her a call today. Tell her you were Quotivated to get your mortgage deal done. All right, what do you say? We take a shot. A shot of motivation.
It's time for a shot of motivation, where the vibe's like taking a shot, but the high is pure inspiration. This is a quick, powerful boost of motivation to fire up your spirit. Get ready for a rapid infusion of uplifting stories, impactful quotes, and game-changing ideas. It's the swift, potent dose you need to amp up your game and win your week. It's a shot of motivation.
I love stories about miracles. I believe in miracles. Miracles happen every single day. I believe that God's behind every miracle that happens. He wills it, He commands it, He executes it. Stories about miracles are so inspiring and uplifting, and I want to share one with you that I came across. It's a blog post, I believe, or an article that was posted to a website. The author is named Dia Susud, and I probably butchered that, so my apologies to you, Dia. But it was a story about her daughter and the miracle that happened to her daughter, not only her daughter, but also her son. Here's what she says. God is a God of miracles. The Bible is full of miraculous stories. A blind man was given sight. A paralyzed man walked. Lazarus came back from the dead. Maybe it's easy to think of miracles as something from biblical times, but do miracles happen today? Well, I saw one firsthand. There came a day when I saw years of stories and a random event prepare me for a life-changing event, because miracles happen. During the summer of 2012, I took my kids swimming at a friend's pool. Friends plus tons of floating objects equals one epic game of war. Very true. My youngest daughter needed to use the bathroom, so I took her into the house and I took off her life jacket. She went to the bathroom, washed her hands. I sent her out
cleaned up the bathroom, then joined the ladies out at the pool watching our kids. After a few minutes of talking, my friend jumped up and started running. I followed her and then saw what she saw. A parent's worst nightmare. My 11-year-old son was carrying the limp body of my almost 3-year-old daughter. She was blue around the lips and pale. Little did I know that while I cleaned up toilet paper and scrubbed a toilet, my daughter had ran outside, jumped in the pool, and drowned. That thought still haunts me some days. Realizing her life jacket was hanging from my arm immediately sent me into the darkest thoughts. It's amazing what you can think of in just a few seconds. My life is over. My husband will never forgive me. I killed my daughter. She wasn't breathing. We couldn't find a pulse. When I touched her, I felt something so strongly inside me. I started praying like crazy, but nothing would come out of my mouth except one word. Jesus. Nothing seemed to happen. Seconds felt like days. Out of desperation, I shouted, "If you don't breathe your life into her, she is dead. So you breathe your life into her." At that moment, she spat a bit of water out of her mouth. And it was then that I had somehow felt God direct me to grab her, throw her over my shoulder, and run. I didn't hesitate. I didn't even know where to run to, but I threw her on my shoulder and ran anyway, until I realized I left my shoes. I turned back, and when I slid into my sandals, my shoulder thrusted into her. I felt water pour out all over me. And then I heard shouting behind me. "She has her color back!" I stopped and turned her around. She was full of color, but a little groggy. As we headed toward the car so we could go to the hospital, she began shouting for her Dora necklace and her Cinderella shoes and her slushie. She's gonna be okay. As if that weren't miraculous enough, there's more to the story. See, for years, my son, who had found her, had had a recurring nightmare that one of his siblings was drowning and he couldn't save them. He would cry and tell me how hard he tried. We told him this dream was not a coincidence. We believed one day he would have an opportunity to save someone from water, and we told him he would be ready to do it. He was 11 years old, playing in a pool, when something told him to turn around. And that's when he found his sister under the raft behind him. I told him, "Do not forget this day. This is the day God prepared you for." I believe God miraculously prepared my son and miraculously showed him what to do. There was so much more to that day, and I wish I could tell you. There were details about friends at the hospital, the nurses, my friends with me at the pool, and even the perspective my kids had. God was in every detail of that day. I believe he's in every detail of every day. We just don't often get to see it so clearly like I did the day of my daughter's drowning. Like I said, I have no doubt miracles happen today because I saw one so clearly. God didn't just miraculously intervene in the lives of the people who lived when the Bible was being written. He still does. When, where, and why he does, we may not always know, but he did for my daughter. And he can for you, because God is the same yesterday as today. Such a powerful story. So many things come together in a moment like that. So many things that you had no idea you were being prepared for. And suddenly you're ready to spring into action. Sometimes those miracles happen in that way. Sometimes they happen in a way that is comforting. I think that's a miracle that's happened in my life. My mother-in-law was diagnosed with cancer. And in late 2006, it became very apparent that there was not much they were going to be able to do. It was November, and some lifelong friends from out of town came to visit, bringing with them one of those tinfoil-looking helium balloons. A sweet gesture. And that balloon hung around. Quite frankly, it was a little annoying. Every now and then you would feel a tick along your neck and reach back to swat away the bug or the mosquito you think is flying around, and it's a stupid little ribbon hanging on a stupid little balloon. Every now and then you would hear it swatted across the room by the ceiling fan. And yet that balloon remained afloat for weeks. The helium did not leave the balloon very quickly. It continued to linger in the air, mostly at the ceiling, traveling from room to room, floating around as if it didn't have a care in the world. December came, and with it came the end of my mother-in-law's life on Earth. And as that was happening, in the midst of the chaos and the coming to terms and the numbness of it all, the disbelief, even though we've known it was coming, the realization that it's actually here, the visible decline, the preparations for services, the calls to hospice, amid all of these things, this stupid little balloon began to lose its helium. And it drifted down to about eye level. It had been floating for weeks on the ceiling. And tonight of all nights, it had to make its appearance known, get in everyone's way. I can't tell you how many times back and forth I would go from the bedroom to the kitchen to the living room, doing things to keep myself busy, thinking that I was helping in some way, and yet having to swat that stupid balloon out of the way. Well, as you can imagine, at a time like this, emotions ran high for myself, for my wife, for my father-in-law, for all of us. And there was one point that my wife and I were admittedly probably a little hysterical. So we walked out of the bedroom. Her mother had drifted off into a coma, was non-responsive. The end was coming very quickly. And as we went into the living room to try to gather ourselves and pray and think and talk and cry and all of the emotions that come with it, there was that stupid balloon. And I'd had enough. I was sick of it, floating around, getting in the way. So I reached back to swat it. One good hard swat. Surely it would rip open. And finally, that nuisance of a balloon would be out of the way. But just as I was about to bring my hand down across the face of this balloon, I stopped. And for the first time, I looked at it. And we had been praying all night for guidance or comfort or support or wisdom of what to do. It just didn't feel like, it just didn't feel like God was listening. But it was at that moment that I stopped myself from swatting the balloon that I've never felt closer to God. Because across the front of the balloon, it said, "For he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways." Psalms 91:11. I reread it, and I reread it, and again, I reread it. This stupid little balloon that had floated across room to room, full of helium for weeks and weeks and weeks. It was only on this night when we needed this message most, did that balloon begin to lose its helium and linger at eye level. If it hadn't done that, I would have never read it. My wife and I read it to each other over and over in the days that followed the funeral, the aftermath. And it was that verse that brought us the comfort that we prayed for. And I believe wholeheartedly that was a miracle. As you go out this week and you prepare for your week, understand something. Miracles are real. You want to win your week? Believe in that. And that's your shot of motivation for the week. I want to thank Amy Reel for sponsoring this week's shot of motivation.
This has been a shot of motivation from America's leading emerging speaker, Jody Powell. We hope it helps you win your week.
All right, let's get to our special guest this week. Brian Wolf, a New Zealander by birth, has lived in the Carolinas the past 40 years, where he was the chief financial officer of a major food retailer and later helped develop loyalty marketing and retailing. Brian is a lifelong Toastmaster and was one of the 8 finalists in its annual World Championship of Public Speaking. He's written 7 books on marketing and speaking, and his love of travel has taken him to all 7 continents. Please welcome to the Quotivation Podcast, Brian Wolf. Brian, how are you, buddy?
Absolutely grand. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. You know, it's been a long time coming. I should have had you on the show a long time ago. You and I go back through Toastmasters. I have to tell this story to kick off because we share a little kinsmanship in the Toastmasters International World Championship of Public Speaking. I was a new Toastmaster, had just found my way into the semifinals of the World Championship of Public Speaking. I really didn't know too many people. We had met on Zoom. This was just right after COVID. And so I go to the convention in Nashville, and I didn't know anyone. Like I said, I'd met several Toastmasters on Zoom, but never in person. And just before the contest, I hear this accent calling out to me down the hallway, "Jody, Jody." I turn around and here comes Brian. Just a big embrace and a big hug. And man, it just took all of the nerves and the butterflies that I had and just made them melt away. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. What an experience that was. Tell us about your experience in Toastmasters and especially being in the finals of the World Championship of Public Speaking.
Okay. Well, as I was thinking about this discussion this morning, I went back over the speeches I won with. And so my history starts essentially in 1978, after I'd moved to America. I started entering contests. In 1978, I won my first district contest. That's how far back it goes, okay? And it was headed with a quote. But anyway, that, I'm jumping ahead of ourselves. So, but history-wise, over the course of that time, 78 to, along the way, decades later, I won the district championship five times, got onto the regional semifinals, therefore five times, was in the top three of those times, and in one occasion I got onto the big stage. So it was the old pyramid as always. You know, you try hard and you finally strike gold. And it's been a wonderful journey. But the greatest thing I've learned about it is that you do learn by being in a contest. It's just, that's the way to go. If you want to learn to speak, you've got to get in there, wrestle in the mud, and you just keep learning. The other thing I'd say on that, and that what I've done, is that I've found speaking has helped me with writing. Because, and I've written, you know, a number of books, but I remember one of my first marketing books, when my first chapter starts, my mother-in-law was right again, as usual. which, of course, is a classic twist. But unless I'd had that from Toastmasters and speaking, I wouldn't have done that.
Sure.
That it catches attention. And that was the other thing I learned about from my Toastmasters, is that you've got to grab attention from the opening bell.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and I applied all that to my marketing books, because it's a conversation.
Sure.
A book is a conversation. As I've learned from Toastmasters, it's a conversation.
Right.
And so we've got to make our speeches conversational. And I still keep learning ways to do that, make it more conversational. It never ends. But similarly, through the written document as well. And even in, I'm doing a lot of consulting still in business. And it's the art of communicating, again, from the lessons from speaking. So it's not just a matter of speaking. It's a matter of being able to communicate. That's the name of the game.
It really is. And I think a lot of people have the misconception that Toastmasters is really about perfecting the art of giving a speech. And that is part of it. But mm-hmm. so much more comes from that. And as you said, it's the art of communication, the art of storytelling. I had no idea how impactful telling stories can be in terms of being able to communicate a point or to really derive camaraderie and thought in with the speaker and the audience. And, you know, I remember my first speech contest. I had a speech that I thought was just going to be powerful. I had statistics. I had all of the facts, and I gave it, and I felt real good. And a mutual friend of ours, Lee Holiday, comes up to me and he says, "That was okay." I said, "Just okay, Lee?" He said, "Well, you communicated a lot of facts. I can't tell you that I remember a single one of them. Tell me a story." And I thought, wow. Tell you a story. And so I went back and reworked it. And that's what led to the semifinals for me, is the story, more so than the facts. Talk to me a little bit about storytelling, and especially in marketing. It's incredibly important. How powerful is storytelling?
Well, funny you say you struggled with it initially. I struggled it for half my Toastmaster career. I didn't understand what they were talking about, because I'd go through the standard speech and the three parts and put it all in. And even though there was story, I never really appreciated what it was. And it's really only in the last probably 20 years I've really come to understand the power of story. Because, again, you know, you keep learning all the time, and you then put it into expressions. But I've learned, for example, that when you give a speech, you are developing a gallery in the audience's mind. A picture gallery,
mm-hmm.
and each gallery is a picture, and each of those are a story, and they remember what's in those pictures. So the more vivid you can make your pictures or your stories, the more they'll remember your speech. And that really sold me. That concept, that idea, really sold me, is what it's all about.
And Brian, you have spent, as I said in the intro, just you know, the last 40 years here in the Carolinas, but your travels have taken you all over the world. Talk to us a little bit about some of the incredible places that you've been and all seven continents. I'm curious to know how you ended up on the least inhabitable continent of Antarctica, but tell us a little bit about your travels around the world and what you take from those.
Okay. Well, growing up in New Zealand, you know, our nearest neighbor was Australia, 1,200 miles away at the nearest point. So we were an isolated nation, and growing up in my early days, there wasn't much of the way of planes flying in and out of the country. Everything was by boat. You took a ship to wherever. So the outside world was always mysterious and always fascinating. And I remember very early in life, a friend of my mother's was traveling to Europe, and she sent a postcard from all these different places. And that got me thinking, this world is amazing. And I've always been fascinated about other places because of that. And I think that little seed, just a postcard, when I was 5 or 6, set my mind to be aware of the big world. So I didn't really start traveling around the world until I think I was 29. When my first big trip out of New Zealand. I took 6 months off, of course, to travel well and see it all. And so I got through all Europe, and then a couple of years later, another 6-month trip. And then after getting married, my wife and I were both interested in travel. So we started doing all sorts of travel each year whenever we could. And we had a daughter, and who's no longer with us, unfortunately, but she got to all 40 countries. She'd been to all 7 continents also before she turned 21. And we were so proud of that.
Wow.
She got all that. But yeah. Getting back to your question, I've been everywhere, mate, you know, that old song. But anyway, the two places or the two trips that stand out more than any other, and there's many that stands out from, was a trip down the Nile and our trip to Antarctica, getting back to Antarctica. Down the Nile, it was about 1990 when we did this, and those days you could actually sail down the Nile. They had to cut it off because of gangs and all that sort of stuff afterwards. But in those days you could sail down. We're about a 10-day trip down the Nile. And lo and behold, the guide on our little ship, we only about 100 people on it, was the head of the Egyptology department of the British Museum.
Wow.
Can't get any better than that. All right.
Right.
And so we stopped at all sorts of places, and one of the highlights of that particular trip is that we stopped. I'm not sure if you know the poem Ozymandias of Egypt. It's a sonnet, one of Shelley's great sonnets. And he talks about the two heads of stone are lying in the desert and just it's bare sand. But it was Ramses II was all about this waste of great kings and all their great possessions. And then they finish up as dust. Never forgotten. But anyway, because I learned this in high school, the guide asked me to recite the sonnet there. So that was really just it's a serendipitous thing. That was really special. But also understanding and seeing an ancient civilization and realizing that we are part of a huge continuum. That's the great thing about travel. Sure. You learn. I mean, the Egyptians, they had toys, they had all sorts of things. Women had their cosmetics way 3000 BC. I mean, man hasn't changed. That's one of the great things I learned. Man hadn't changed. And I learned that from Egypt. On the other hand, spending about probably 12 days on a ship off Antarctica, and we'd go from place to place. You can't stay on the Antarctica roll. You can't take anything on shore. When you get off, you have to, I mean, you can't even go to the bathroom on Antarctica. Then the ships won't let you. So you get checked out and you get on shore and walk around and climb these hills and mountains, look at, you know, glaciers and everything else. The only thing there on Antarctica are penguins, and lots of them and their smell, and seals. Mm-hmm. That's it. And whales, of course. That is the only life.
Wow.
Lichen, no grass. You see the green mold. That's it. But you feel as though you're in the presence of God. It's so white and so blue and so still and so beautiful.
Yeah.
It takes your breath away. It really is one of the most awesome sights and sensitive experience I've ever had.
Mm.
And so two ships, two different parts of the world, but two unbelievable experiences. And that's what travel does for you. You never know what you're going to come home with.
Sure.
It's the surprises of travel. Absolutely priceless.
And really the thought of travel for me, especially, you know, most of my travel has been limited here to the United States, you know, which is fine. We have beautiful sights and wonderful parks and those kind of things that are hundreds of years old. Mm. Traveling the world, you get to see things that are thousands of years old and experience things that have happened long before America even was ever thought of, which is just fascinating. And then to hear you describe Antarctica, there's one word that truly comes to mind, and it's just pure.
Yeah.
Pure, clean, fresh environment. And it just that sounds incredible, and to know that it is being preserved in such a way that you can't take anything on to the continent, you can't stay. It's a heartwarming feeling to know that there is somewhere in the world that is just pure like that.
Yeah, well, let me add a couple of things. There are some little buildings there. For example, there are scientific outposts you see there, but there's an old Russian-Greek church built in 1900 and something. But also we saw Shackleton's little stone hut that he built way back in 1915 when he saved his crew.
Wow.
That's still there. It was only about 8 foot by 8 foot. They were definitely about 23 men. I mean, quite something. But to see that, and as I say, you connect with the past.
Yeah.
And that's the magic of it all.
That's powerful. That's powerful. And a Toastmaster, even before being a Toastmaster, reciting the poem on the ship down the Nile.
Yeah.
what a wonderful experience.
I'll send you the poem afterwards. It's a classic sonnet. It's one of the greats.
Love that. I would love that. And I'll put it in the episode notes for everyone mm-hmm. to enjoy there as well. Brian, you've had incredible experience as well in the world of business, being a chief financial officer and being in marketing as well. Talk to me a little bit about some of the things that you've taken away that have enriched your life that you've learned from the world of business.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, first of all, being chief financial officer meant I was a nerd and all that sort of stuff, those sorts of things. But the funny thing was when I went and in my early days in New Zealand and supermarketing, our company only had, when I first started, they had three stores and it kept growing every year and so on. But I got involved in every committee. And so I learned everything about the business.
Hmm.
And so what happened when I went to business school, I topped the class at Harvard in marketing. I didn't, you know, here I was an accounting nerd, popping the class marketing. So, and that gave me a lust for marketing and applying that. And so I was able to tie numbers and marketing together. So that was the thing I liked so much there. And so after I was grown sort of fat and happy in the supermarketing world, I sort of pulled out of that and I thought I'd retire, but I haven't done it. I haven't quite got there yet. And I really got involved in marketing. And I for some reason, somehow I got invited to do a 6-month study on frequent shopping cards. It was just starting in the food industry at that time because we didn't have the technology for anything great. So here it was back in 1993 and no one really knew how to make it work and be profitable and all sort of stuff. So I was blessed. I was selected over the big consulting firms of America to do this job, just myself, and I got an assistant and helped me. So for 6 months, we studied the whole thing around the world and came up with a report that was my first big contribution. And it became the Bible for the food industry on how a frequent shopping card can work and be profitable. Mm. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
Wow.
It's applying logic to marketing. So that's, again, the serendipity. But I would never have got that job if I hadn't been a Toastmaster to learn how to speak, to get myself into business school and get selected to be a chief financial officer who flows to San Francisco or Paris or London or Edinburgh to give presentations
mm-hmm.
on finance. So speaking is, you know, a wonderful thing. And you never know what's going to happen with your speaking skills.
So many great things come from just those small decisions that we make, those that extra little bit of, whether it's networking, whether it's deciding to volunteer, whether it's deciding how we use our time. We never know what that leads to. And I think that's really the important thing. One of the things that I've learned just through not only the business world, but also kind of being out of the business world and getting back into the business world, is that nothing happens if we're sitting on the couch.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. That's a good quote.
Can I use it? Absolutely. You absolutely can use that. Nothing happens sitting on the couch. We got to move. We got to meet. We got to talk. We got to go do things. We got to follow passions. Your passion for speaking, your passion for wanting to learn how to speak and how to develop a speech has led to so many other opportunities that you never would have thought of. And the same thing, that's such a true statement for so many Toastmasters throughout the world, that that these opportunities just come from places that we never really would have realized. And I know you have a real passion for instructing on speaking. Tell us a little bit about the speaker toolkit and how people can take advantage of that, how people can grab hold of that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've written three books on speaking. The first one was the speaker toolbox, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And it's the ingredient book for a speaker. And I listen to all the great speakers and Toastmasters. I've taken copious notes and so on. And so I condensed it into, you know, the 47 different tools that you need. And it's been out there in the marketplace for 8 years now. And then I wrote two other books that followed. But I thought a few years ago, I'd hate all this knowledge to go to waste. So my initial plan was to give these three books in my will, you know, to Toastmasters, if they give it away free to everybody. And then a few months ago, I said, why wait? So I decided as you know, just a few weeks ago to get the first book and give it to everybody. And it's on my website, you know, brianwolf.com. And when they get there, they see books by Brian. You click that and then you click the book, which is the speaker's toolbox. And you can download the book free. And my intent was, well, my goal is I'd love every Toastmaster in the world, all 270,000 of them, to have that, because that would be a basic tool. And part of the impetus for that is that I look at back on my life and I am so upset that there was so much knowledge out there, I didn't know anything about it. In fact, yeah, you'll be interested in this. I'm preparing a speech for the district sometime when they ask me to speak next. The 10 things I wish I had learned in my first year of Toastmasters. Those are 10 of the tools.
All right? Wonderful. Yeah.
And it took me 30 years to learn them. Mm-hmm. And that's a waste. And, you know, I'm a great believer in Wikipedia. What they're trying to do is sharing everything. I believe in that. And that's what I'm trying to do. Share it. Give it out. And that's what that's my dream with this book. I'd like everyone, whether a Toastmaster or not, if they're interested in speaking, to take it. And look at the lessons. And it's a great book for two reasons. One, it gives you all the tools you can use. But also at the back, to me, the secret weapon is it's got 10 great speeches in it that people can read and play with and use. And that is priceless.
That absolutely is priceless. And I know if those 10 speeches came from Brian Wolf, they're not only priceless, they're amazing speeches, because he is one of the great speakers that I've heard in Toastmasters. And to get that book, The Speaker's Toolbox, go to brianwolf.com. And Wolf is with two O's, W-O-O-L-F. So that's www.brianwolf.com. And you can click on the books there and you can see all of the books that Brian has written, but also you can download that book, that ebook for free, The Speaker's Toolbox. And it is an incredibly valuable book, a great resource for any aspiring speaker, anyone that ever thought, boy, I wish I could do that. Well, here's your first step. Download the book, take a look at the tools that are within that. And then your second step is to join a Toastmasters club, because that's where you get really good in terms of being able to practice your speaking. Brian, I know one thing that I'm asked all the time as I've done some speaking classes and as people have invited me to speak, they say, how do I become a really great speaker? Well, there's no magic pill. There's no trick. And you hear things like, oh, you know, you imagine your audience in their underwear. And all, don't do that. Don't do that. Here's how you become a great speaker.
You speak. You have to practice. It's a repetition. It's an art. It's a muscle that you have to really train. And if you really want to practice, if you really want to have access to do that, Toastmasters Club is a great place to be able to practice, to get valuable feedback. I tell you, the feedback that I got from you and from others in Toastmasters Clubs as I was competing was so invaluable. I use them to this day. It's incredible. So, Brian, let's hop into your quote. I can't wait to talk about this one. If you would, tell us what your quote is, who said it, and why it's impactful for you.
Okay. The quote is, and I normally adapt the quote a little to fit my time and so on, but the quote is, the most difficult math to master is to learn how to count your blessings. And that was from Eric Hoffer, the author of a book called The True Believer and a number of other books, but he was an amazing American, basically little educated, but became self-educated, became one of the wisest men in America. And he used to share his wisdom in his writings and so on. But the reason why that is so important, because it relates to two or three other quotes that are very, very dear to me. And for example, one is Dr. Seuss. We're all at times invited to funerals and so on and write notes to people. But one of the greatest lessons I've learned is a Dr. Seuss quote. And that was, he said, don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened. And that is one of the nicest consolation pieces I think you can give somebody.
Yes.
And it's not just when people die, it's when your kid has a bad time, they all have their boyfriends and girlfriends, they break up, they get a job and get fired, all these things. But remember, there's a two-part to it. And another one is from a true story from a fellow in the Second World War. And he was working in an aircraft factory, building planes for the British to gun fight in Europe. And he had a terrible accident. He lost both of his hands. And he was in distraught for a couple of years until someone told him, it's not what you've lost, it's what you have left that matters. And that changed his mind. He became a different person because he started thinking differently.
Sure.
And that gets back to Harford. It's really count our blessings. We are blessed with so much. I read a quote the other day from St. Augustine, how he talks about back in 400 AD, we go and travel the world to see the mountains and the rivers and everything else. We take these great distances, but we forget to look at ourselves, the miracle of ourselves. We don't count our blessings.
Yep.
That's a tragedy.
It is.
We forget what we have. We forget about our family. How well do we know our own town? I mean, there's so much that we overlook. And it's being aware. In fact, I was hearing a speech only last night. I'm a speechaholic. I love listening to them whenever I can. And this guy was speaking. One of his great lessons was, be curious. He said, if I was running a school, that'd be the first thing I'd do. Every day at the end of school, I'd say, what did you learn today? Be curious. We all have a cell phone. We can all ask any questions we like about the world. Be right. Curious. And that would be the greatest educational gift that he would love to give to the world. Fascinating. But that's really what it's all about. It's about being curious and being grateful because it opens your eyes.
Absolutely. And if only everyone would use their cell phone in that manner, as opposed to hopping onto social media and seeing the so-called perfect lives of our friends on Facebook. And why can't I travel there? And why can't my family do this? Boy, that just, it absolutely takes away the gratitude and the thankful mindset that we should have when we should count our blessing. It's not about what other people are doing. And oh, by the way, most of those posts are incredibly fabricated because we all have things in our lives that are not going well, that the challenges and trials that we go through. And so, and those are even things, the challenges that we face, the trials, the difficult times, those are blessings that we need to count because of what comes out of them and because of what we learn from them. And boy, if we could just shift that mindset to be so grateful, I think we've lost a lot of that, not only in America, but across the world. We've just lost our gratitude in a lot of ways. And I don't know how we get that back, Brian. I'm not sure how to do that other than to have these kind of conversations.
Yeah, well, it's the value systems. They change over time. And another great quote of mine that I love using is, today's peacock is tomorrow's feather duster. Won a speech contest, you'd be happy to know. Our district speech contest in 1990. There's one old Toastmaster, I know she still quotes me on it when she ever runs into me. But it made it a point, but it's a great quote.
Yeah.
And I think partly getting back to your question or thought, I think that's part of the problem. We are so accepting of everything, and so we're getting lazy, and we stop appreciating what we have. And one day we're going to lose it.
Sure.
And we have to go through the whole cycle all over again. And that's what happened when you look back in history. It's a cycle.
It is.
It happens every time. It happens in a company. Think of the average American company only lasts 30 years. Not very long.
It's not very long at all.
Cycle of life.
Yes.
Because even in a company, you know, the company grows and everything else, but then you have the heel nippers that are coming in and pulling out a piece of you and eating away at you. And you have to keep reinventing yourself. And if you don't, bang.
That's true.
And so that's part of it.
You have competitors chasing you. You have, of course, you have the problem of facing immediate success and hubris, you know, and just being satisfied with where you are instead of forging ahead like you did in your startup days to find that success. You got to continue on that path to find success continuously. And success comes in so many different versions and I think in blessings. One of the toughest lessons I learned early on in my career is what success truly means. I was young, right out of school. I wanted to work on big projects and make a name for myself and do cool things. And I had this very sweet grandmotherly lady. Just, I'm not going to say she was old, but she was very grandmotherly, Brian. And she came to me and she said, you know, you can do those things. That doesn't last. I said, what do you mean it doesn't last? She said, well, today's cutting edge technology is a joke 10 years from now. I mean, you think about the technology 10 years ago compared to today, and our kids laugh. My kids laugh at the fact that I was playing, you know, these Nintendo games when I was little, and they look at the games that they get to play today, and then the games that I played, oh, this, it's archaic. But what true success was, she said, was the impact that you leave upon a person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was in my 20s, like, oh, yeah, sure, whatever. And boy, it really hit home. You know, you work on the projects, you look back on it 20 years later and you just kind of laugh because the project that I worked on was using the cutting edge technology of electronic signatures. Ooh, everyone does an electronic signature today. Back then it was a new cutting edge technology. It wasn't even, it had just come into to be legally recognized. And we thought we were doing some great things, but it took that it took that experience to realize that what lasts is how you make people feel and the impact that you have on people, because then they share that with the world. And boy, you know, she's no longer with us, but her impact on my life, I hope, is having an impact on others, and she continues to live on through that legacy. And that's what counting your blessings is about, I think.
In fact, I have a quote on that.
Absolutely. Say that again. I'm sorry.
We are part of all we meet.
That's exactly right. I love that quote. That's fantastic quote. Yes.
Yeah.
It's very true. Very true. Brian, as we wrap up, if someone's listening right now, they're thinking, okay, well, this is a great quote. Boy, how can I use this? The hardest math to master, or the hardest arithmetic to master, is learning to count our blessings, from Eric Hoffer. How would you advise our listeners to take this quote and allow them to win their week this week?
First of all, you have to understand that it's a matter of opinion. And understand is what we're really saying here, that we are blessed with so much. And when was the last time you took a moment to realize this? and stop, you know, all the activity and look inwards just for a moment, and then start thinking of all the things that we are grateful for. For our spouse, for our children, for our relatives, for our job, for being healthy. I mean, we've all had bad things. And for our relations, that we live in a safe society when the world's going crazy. There are so many things. If you do nothing else, think of just one blessing a day. And think about it all. Why is that meaningful to me? And what is so special about it? And then the other thing, but more particularly also, that the people that are so good to us, that have made an impact on us. Mm-hmm. We're part of all we meet. Who are the people that we've met that we're grateful for? When was the last time we called somebody and said, thanks for this, or dropped a note to somebody, or in a Toastmasters club at the last meeting? Drop the note after the meeting, not during the meeting, after the meeting, say, I really like the way you did such and such. I mean, it's those little gifts of giving.
Yes.
And then you're starting to understand how all of these things are making our lives better. It's all around us. And it's time to sort of give back and pay back and tell others how they are making a difference in my life, but also making ourselves more appreciative of those very close around us. Mm.
Such wonderful advice on how you can win your week this week from Brian Wolf. Brian, I can't thank you enough for being on the podcast. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I wish we had four more hours just to converse and to share war stories and go back and forth. But I really appreciate your time today. Thank you for being on the podcast.
A real, real pleasure, Jody. Enjoyed it very much. Thanks.
Well, that was my dear friend, Brian Wolf, right here on the Quotivation Podcast. Brian, thank you so much for being on. You know, what a wonderful quote from Brian. And he gave us the quote that the hardest math to master is the ability to count your blessings. Such a stark reminder that what we have in our lives truly should be counted as blessings. It's so easy to look at the negative side. It's so easy to go down that path. But the hardest thing to master is counting everything you have as blessings, because that's exactly what they are. And Brian wants to bless you. And he wants to bless you with a free gift. So if you go to his website, www.brianwolf.com, and Wolf is spelled W-O-O-L-F, two O's in Wolf in his last name. Right there on the homepage, you have the opportunity to download a free ebook. It's called The Speaker's Toolbox. And this isn't just for Toastmasters or professional speakers. This is for everyone. If you want to enhance your speaking ability, your ability to communicate, you're going to download these. I'm scrolling through now and I'm looking at the table of contents. 47 tools that you can use to improve your communication. And it's a free ebook. It downloads right into a PDF. Wonderful examples of how to use things to grab the attention of your audience. Things like talking about details, connecting with participants, humor, lines that linger. I love that title, lines that linger. Those memorable sound bites that you leave your audience with and leave them wanting more. Props, quips, senses, smiles. Oh, the importance of smiling when you're speaking to a group. It's so impressive to see these 47 tools that you can use to improve your communication, whether it's in a meeting, whether it's in a speech situation, whether you're asked to speak in front of a crowd, or even just conversing one-on-one with your peers and your family. You'll want to download the 47 tools, the Speaker's Toolbox, from Brian Wolf at www.brianwolf2os.com. Brian, again, thank you so much for being on the Quotivation Podcast. Now, before you go download that ebook, stick around. We've got just enough time for the last slice of cheesecake.
How about some dessert before you go? There isn't anything that can't be solved over a slice of cheesecake. So before we wrap things up, sit back, relax, and enjoy the last slice of cheesecake.
The most difficult math to master is learning to count your blessings. Such a powerful quote that was given to us by our guest, Brian Wolf, who has become a dear friend and mentor for me as I've been going through my speaking career and learning how to communicate and to share in a way that's impactful with other people. A lot to learn, still a long way to go, but Brian has been one of those that have been right alongside me on this journey. And I appreciate Brian, his friendship, his advice. I appreciate his experience, and I count Brian Wolf as a blessing. And this quote has blessed me this week because it does give us an opportunity to step back and realize the things that are in our life that we need to consider as blessings. So often we get caught in the rat race. So often we get caught up in the hustle and the bustle and the things to do and the things the kids are involved in, the things that the family's involved with, the obligations that I have at work, at home, in the community, in my church, and whatever you're involved in. We get just so busy. And sometimes we look at things that bless us as burdens. And we all fall into that trap. I've done it myself. There are times that I will look at something that's in my life and something that is blessing me, and I'll think, boy, I'm not in the mood to do that. I'm not ready to do that. I want to do something else. I want to go veg out on the couch and binge a little Netflix, which accomplishes nothing. And inevitably, when I get up and I go do the thing that I'm kind of not wanting to do, I'm usually doubly blessed after having done it. And so we have to really stop and we have to shift our mindset in such a manner that we're in a state of gratitude. Go back a long way. I think it was episode 4 with Rob Schwimmer. And Rob talked about how we shift our mindset to a state of gratitude. And there have been studies to show that you can't be angry when you're in a state of gratitude. So what are we grateful for? The job? I hear the laughter from some of you. The job? No, not the job. I'm not grateful. That job's terrible. It's a terrible job. I hate my job. But you know, we need to bloom where we're planted. And it doesn't mean we're going to be planted there for the rest of our lives or for the rest of our career. But while we're here, we should bloom where we're planted. And what that means is that we become and we give and we share the best version of ourselves with those around us, no matter where we are, no matter how we feel about it. Because at the end of the day, whether you want to admit it or not, that job is a blessing. What about that relationship? Oh, boy, I've been thinking about ending this relationship, this friendship, this romance for a while. But is that the right decision? And maybe it is. But while you're in it, while you're there, bloom where you're planted. Count your blessings. Realize the good that comes from things. Realize the things that have made you a better person. The things that you have learned. How you have grown. Those are blessings. Blessings come from the weirdest places. From the strangest situations. And we need to recognize them when they happen. It doesn't mean that we're obligated to stay in a situation that we don't need to be in. It just means that we need to be grateful. Grateful for the things that have happened. As Brian said in that beautiful Dr. Seuss quote, don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. Focus on the experience, the memories, the learnings, the gains. What you have been able to provide to other people through those situations. It's always the most fulfilling for me is to see someone thrive because of something I did or something I said. Those are blessings. And when we sit back and we truly count our blessings, if you do it right and you do it in an objective mind frame, a non-prejudicial mind frame. You don't allow your emotions or how you feel about people or situations or places to get involved. When you truly do it objectively and you count your blessings, what you're going to find is you're going to run out of numbers. You can't run out of numbers. No, numbers are infinite. Exactly. I want to thank Brian Wolf for being on the Quotivation Podcast today. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank Amy Real for sponsoring our Shot of Motivation. I want to encourage you this week, take some time, count your blessings, realize the good that has come from situations, from places, from people, from things that have blessed your life. Thank someone for being a blessing to you. That's how you'll win your week this week. That's all the time we have for the Quotivation Podcast. Until next time, stay quotivated.
You have been listening to the Quotivation Podcast, hosted by America's leading emerging speaker, Jody Powell. If you would like to book Jody to speak at your company, conference, or next event, visit www.jodypowellspeaks.com. You can also email him at Jody, that's J-O-D-Y, at jodypowellspeaks.com. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the Quotivation Podcast. And remember, stay quotivated.